So, many of you might know, last Sunday was the 54th Super Bowl. So that's the largest football game in the National Football League season. You may have heard or read that there was lots of conversation surrounding the halftime show and Shakira and J-Lo. But, in my opinion, the real story from the Super Bowl is about a woman named Katie Sower. Who knows that name? Anyone? A couple people. Yes. Katie Sower was also at the Super Bowl. She's the offensive assistant coach for the San Francisco 49ers. Unfortunately, we have a few fans. Unfortunately, they didn't win. Not that I follow it, but that was just fun to say. Sowers began her American football career playing in the Women's Football Alliance. And upon her retirement, she joined the National Football League in 2016 as the coach for the Atlanta Falcons training camp. Then moved over to the 49ers in 2017. Sowers became the first LGBTQ coach in the NFL when she publicly came out in 2017 before the season. With the 49ers participating in the Super Bowl this year, she became the first female and openly gay coach to coach in the Super Bowl. A lady. Yeah, go ahead, that's great. A lady, a woman, a girl, who has probably heard more no's and criticism, and who's been laughed at more times than any of us because her dream was to play in football and be in football. She's living her dream. Shakira, your hips don't lie. And J-Lo, I'll always sing Jenny from the Block as loud as I can whenever it comes on. But in my opinion, Katie Sowers is the hero of Super Bowl 54. I have to be honest with you, I absolutely love having robust conversations about women, roles, expectations. And that's what I love about the book of Luke. Luke seems to highlight stories of women even more than the other gospel writers. He seems to give women a place of prominence and importance. And I love that about Hillside too. Hillside is a church that works very hard to highlight the value, capacity, heart, strength, and wisdom of women in our community. Not as an afterthought, but rather as an equal, formidable component of leadership, community, family, and the kingdom as a whole. At the very least, that has been my experience. Don't hear what I'm not saying. I don't want to diminish the many ways that women have been hurt, marginalized, held back, and oppressed at the hands of men in the church over time. I want to acknowledge the harm that has been done, and scripture has been used to justify it many times. The former U.S. President Jimmy Carter summed it up when he said, "The carefully selected verses found in the Holy Scriptures to justify the superiority of men owe more to time and place and the determination of male leaders to hold on to their influence than eternal truths." The same discriminatory thinking lies behind the continued gender wage gap in pay, and why there are still so few women in the office in the West today. The root of this prejudice lies deep in our histories, but its impact is felt every day. And it's not just women and girls alone who suffer. It damages all of us. Today, I'd like to get a little bit honest with you about this issue. I have my own, like many of us, personal journey with the misconceptions around the role of women in life, leadership, and ministry. During my whole Christian journey, until about 6 or 7 years ago, I lived my life under a certain misconception, and it went something like this. I submit to my husband. I can teach, lead, and even in the past, I've been a full-time pastor at a church, but only in a submissive, complimentary, never bigger nor better than any man in my church type of way. Now hold on, don't start throwing things at me. Just take a deep breath. The story doesn't end there. This was my belief until a lot of coffees with my former boss, James Coolidge, who happens to be here today, and our pastor, Purnell. These two men challenged some of these thoughts for me, and they spoke value into me as a woman. But more importantly, they helped me reframe my views and behaviors in so many ways. I will forever be grateful for these men in my life. So armed with these new truths and ideas about my value as a woman, I began little by little to step into my strong womanhood, a place that I believe Jesus has given me. It's a platform to tell my story, God's restoration in my life as a gifted, strong, compelling woman, equipped as a component, not opponent, to the leadership that I've been given. And so far, I think I'm doing all right in this and leading in a way to show other women and girls, including my own daughters. Now, I'm feeling very hopeful about the way that women and girls are beginning to hear a new narrative, and we are beginning to be embraced, included, valued, and we're excelling in our community. That's each of you in this room. I am hopeful about how young girls are seeing more and more doors opened and barriers removed. Then one day, I'm driving along with one of my daughters, and what feels almost like out of nowhere, she says, "I want to be a boy." Now, please know I tell you this story with her permission, and as a matter of fact, she actually insisted on reading my message last night to make sure I told it to you accurately. Now, if you know my family, and they're the rowdy bunch back there at the table, you probably know this. We don't do anything little or quietly. We live out loud. Sometimes to a fault. Yeah, you know those people have had dinner at my house. So this proclamation of hers doesn't super faze me. So I park the car and I ask her to help me unpack this thought. I say, "Why do you want to be a boy? Help me understand." Her response is, "Mom, you're going to laugh at me." I reassured her, "I'm not going to laugh at her. I just want to understand some of the thought process that's going through her mind when she thinks this way and feels this way." So I ask her again, "Why do you want to be a boy?" Well, she pauses. "Mom, do you know boys have all the privileges?" She's 9, I might add. Now, it takes a lot for me to be surprised, but this did it. For a few moments, I was speechless. After a long conversation, we came to realize she doesn't actually physically want to be a boy. She simply wants access to what the boys have access to do the things that boys do. But she felt like she couldn't. You see, the boys at her school told her she can't play basketball because she's a girl. Now, in her 9-year-old mind, that is privilege. But what will it be later? What will she feel like she has to change about herself to gain access? So over time, and many more conversations, I help my girl understand she has a voice and a place in this world. And if she wants to play basketball or anything else, she doesn't need a boy's permission nor approval. Come on now. So this is it. This is the moment I realize we can't just wrestle through these ideas alone. We need to bring our whole family and community along for the conversation and the journey. If it takes a village to raise a child, should we not be intentionally helping our little girls to understand their value and worth as created in the image of God? So this begs the question, how can we do this more proactively together? Now, over the past few weeks, we've worked through this teaching series about some of the questions that Jesus has asked. And this week, we look at the question, do you see this woman? I believe to unpack this question, we actually need to ask a few questions ourselves. The first question I believe we should ask is, are we as a community operating in a way that causes us to see women? In many ways, yes. And like I said before, that has been my experience. I have led in different capacities here at Hillside. I've been involved in youth and teaching and hosting. I have always, always felt seen, known, and equal. Equal, yet beautifully different. I believe this difference has less to do with my sex or gender and more to do with my heart and capacity. The second question I believe we should ask ourselves is, what does the Bible show us? And I think that Jesus asking Simon this question, do you see this woman? It's not about this woman's gender either. I believe this is more to bring attention to her heart and behavior as examples for everyone present. Her behavior shows that she was less concerned with what everyone thought of her and that her heart was more concerned with following and worshiping Jesus. Just imagine this scene. The woman is standing behind Jesus, and early into the meal, she begins to weep. We don't read, as I turn the page, that she was racked with sobs, but we do read that her tears fell upon Jesus' feet. How long this goes on for, we are not told. Each tear makes a brown wet mark in the dust of his feet until his feet are wet with her tears. She unfastens her hair, removing the cloth she may have worn over it, and lets it fall free. She kneels down and begins to wipe his feet with her hair. At this time, to go out in public with her hair down would be considered a shameful thing to do, yet she isn't deterred. She is bold in her love for Jesus. She doesn't conform to what culture and society have prescribed at this moment. In my opinion, she's extremely courageous, much like Katie Sower, who took her place alongside the male coaches on the football field. This actually leads me to another thing that I love about Luke, the book of Luke. Luke often pairs a story of a woman alongside a man. So let me give you a couple of examples. In Luke 13, we read the parable of the mustard seed. The seed was planted by a man. Alongside it, the parable of the yeast. The yeast was used by a woman. In Luke 15, the parable of the lost sheep. The sheep was searched for by a male shepherd. And the parable of the lost coin. The coin was searched for by a woman. And again in Luke 11, the parable of the persistent male friend and the parable of the persistent female widow. Here's my opinion on that. These examples show that women do not have to take the place of a man to be seen or heard. We do not have to erase the men in our stories to increase our value. We do not need to take away from the amazing things that men have done and continue to do in our lives and in our community. I believe men and women are created equally in the image of God, each carrying unique characteristics, for example, strength, beauty, vulnerability, and so on. I think we need to see beyond these titles of men and women and the preconceived ideas of how God uses people according to those titles and see people for who they are and how God has equipped them. Recently, I had a conversation with some friends of ours who were over for dinner. We started talking about me sharing with you today and what I would be talking about. And the woman with the blood issue from Luke 8 came up in conversation. One of my friends went on to share how he had heard this story from a unique perspective. Let me refresh your memory. The account of Luke 8 goes like this. As he, Jesus, went, the crowds pressed in on him. Now there was a woman who had been suffering from hemorrhages for 12 years, and though she had spent all she had on physicians, no one could cure her. She came up behind Jesus and touched the fringe of his clothes, and immediately her hemorrhage stopped. Then Jesus asked, "Who touched me?" When all denied it, Peter said, "Master, the crowds surround you and press in on you." But Jesus says, "Someone touched me, for I noticed the power had gone out of me." When the woman saw she could no longer remain hidden, she came trembling and fell down before him. She declared in the presence of all the people why she had touched him and how she had been immediately healed. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace." Now, just like the other unnamed woman that Purnell read to us earlier, this woman also falls at the feet of Jesus. Jesus does not chastise either one of them, but rather causes those present to look at these women. For the woman with the blood issue, he draws attention to her by asking, "Who touched me?" Now, Jesus knew the answer. He wasn't asking her to receive an answer. And this is what I think is absolutely mind-blowing. He was asking to elevate this woman, to give her a platform to tell her story. She was broken, Jesus healed her, and she told everyone. What she had to say mattered. For the woman that we read about earlier, who she cried and anointed Jesus, he brings attention to her by asking, "Do you see this woman?" Again, not to reveal her sin, as some may think, but rather to give her a platform to be an example of extravagant love and worship. And Jesus responds in the exact same manner to both. "Your faith has healed you. Go in peace." So today, in a moment, we're going to sing again. But I think we need to ask a few questions, and I'm going to give you some time to reflect on them. These questions have dramatically changed my life. My entire family dynamic has changed in a beautiful way. I no longer feel afraid to lead at church, and in my work, I aim every day to see each person as God's image bearer, with the capacity to show me more about myself and God. So I'd like you to take a moment to reflect on these three questions and ask yourself, in my life, do I give space for people to share, lead, and use what God has given them and done in them, both men and women? Are my ideas about gender roles a barrier to myself or others? And do I embrace every person as God's image bearers?